Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. He's going to be here shortly. Had to be excused for a couple of minutes, but he will be joining us in no time. And welcome and good afternoon, wherever you are tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in this wonderful afternoon. It's the 30th. That is another way of saying it's month end. Yay! And it's also winter, so it keeps getting colder. And looking at judging by the weather forecast, it's gonna get a little chilly this weekend. Is it chilly? Nah, it's gonna be freezing cold. Now, just get your hoodies if you are a hoodie guy like yours truly here, and get your sweater or a coat or whatever it is that should keep you warm so that you don't freeze, because we need listeners like you. So let's talk about something that is actually one of my favorite topic in public discourse, and that is gambling. Not gambling, just gambling in general. But that's going to be part of today's discussion. But we are looking at gambling from the perspective of responsible gambling. It's sort of like responsible drinking, but this one is about gambling. And I'm missing the responsible drinking reference, because we more often hear the same thing in reference to alcoholic beverages. Drink responsibly, not blue. Jeez, my English just disappeared. Must be, my English just decided to pick its bags and leave with the month of June. So that's how I'm equating it in my head. These are the type of comparisons that I'm making in my head of today's home run discussion of responsible gambling. So to me, that sounds like the same discussion would have if we were talking about responsible drinking. And interesting enough, I've never heard of responsible smoking. I wonder why that is. But the thing is, one thing that has been, one thing that is not debatable is that for a lot of countries, especially those ones that you find in the Western world, basically the world over, that have some kind of gambling revenue generation being more like a practiced on a national level, having a national gambling institution. Like we have the Gambling Board of Namibia here. Now, and basically the Gambling Board is overall responsibility is to oversee the gambling practice in Namibia, to make sure that the institution that offer the service, if you can call it that, have the proper licensing, that they are adhering to all the legal requirements put in place. Like, you cannot participate in this, until you are at a certain age. Last time I checked was about 21 years of age. Now, here's the thing. It's a fascinating industry in terms of revenue generation. And one fun fact. One of the scam that became very, that basically dominated the online scamming shortly after COVID-19, it was something called pig butchering. It's still practiced to this day, I believe, but started shortly during the COVID-19 pandemic, and then all the way through to the end of the COVID-19 lockdowns. Pig butchering was one of a lot of victims, especially in the Western world, suffered from that scheme. Now, what was pig butchering about, and why am I bringing it up? It's because according to an Al Jazeera and CNN documentary that was done, was that Al Jazeera or BBC or Al Jazeera and CNN, but Al Jazeera is one of them. They did, they decided to look at when did this type of scamming begin? And we talked about this about a year or two ago. One thing they learned was that the pig butchering as a scam is something that began shortly after the COVID-19 lockdowns. It may have started shortly. It may have started during the COVID-19 lockdowns, because the reason they gave was that there are a lot of casinos that did not have customers because, well, it was COVID-19 lockdowns, and they didn't have a lot of customers coming in. So they decided to repurpose their technology, especially their internet and computers, so basically everything techy that they use in these casinos. They decided to repurpose it to a different way of making money, and then they realized that it turns out even during the middle of COVID-19 lockdowns, one can still make money by just scamming people. Now, why did they call it pig butchering? Now, the reason was this looked very legit. It took a while before people basically woke up to the realization that it's some form of scam. So take, for example, someone, usually a smoking hot, way out of your league, especially if you're a guy, way out of a league, smoking hot lady, will reach out to you, or someone who has a very legitimately looking and sounding, financial, more like side hustle advice. So they reach out to you, usually obviously online, and tell you that, you know what, if you download this app, and just deposit this amount of money per week, or per month, or per certain period of time, in this time, of your investment, you will make this amount of money. So, you know how we test the water. So, a lot of people decided to start giving it a try. So, instead of putting in my entire, $20,000, they will put in, take for example, just $1,000 in. Okay, they will just download the app or create an account and then transfer them their money from their, from their bank account. Obviously, you can do this digitally online, right? Online these days, and then move it to their account on that particular app. True to the financial advisor's words, what began happening was that, after I moved my $1,000 from my FNB, Bank Windhoek, or Standard Bank account to the app that I was told by a total stranger to move my money into, after moving that money in that app account, I'll just be there, watching. This is a trial run. A lot of people basically did it in the beginning, at least as a trial run. And they realized that, you know what, at the end of the time period, they were told that they will make a certain amount of money. Oh boy, did they make the exact amount of money they were told they would make. Now, when someone gives you advice like that and it deceptively comes true, what's going to be your thought? Oh my God, it works. Now, the thing is, after realizing that, okay, you know what, the $1,000 that I deposited in my account on this app have multiplied to $3,000, like I was told by the guy that told me to download the app. So, after 2-3 weeks or maybe a month, I have, that amount have already gone to, to three times what it was. Basically, $3,000-$4,000. At this point, I have already confirmed that, you know what, this is not a scam. This is not a scam. It works. So, what's the most natural thing to do? Of course, you take more money and invest and basically, put it in that account so that, at the end of the same time period, if not a little longer, you will have made even more money than you did with $1,000. But, except that is where the trap now was, because that's why they called it pig butchering scam. that in, now, the thing is, after 3 months, the 10,000 that I put in the, in that account has now, well, multiplied into maybe 15,000 or 20,000, 25, maybe even 30,000. Now, then you start seeing something interestingly tricky. That one of the requirements is you can only withdraw a limited amount of money. You can't withdraw all the money all at once. And that should have been a red flag. A lot of people did not see that red flags. And now the thing is, what they realized was that 2, 3, maybe 4 months down the line of investment, when they have poured maybe 40, 50, even more in this EPS account, the next thing they came to realize was that they have been locked out of their own account. And all the contacts they were given to reach in the event of, customer service, they were not reachable anymore. Now, the time period that you are pouring money in this app after giving it a trial run and realizing deceptively that it works, that was the pig fattening time. And then when they realized that, you know what, this money is enough for us to basically take for ourselves and disappear, they would butcher that pig. You know, guess who the pig is? You idiot. So a pig butchering scheme. The pig butchering scheme came out of mostly casinos, mostly out of Asia, but you can bet mostly, or also chance are very high, casinos in the West came out of that. Because now, I'm a little careful of how I read sources because, when you are reading, whenever you are reading or watching media sources that are Western, especially if the story being told is of something that's going on in the East, take that with a wheelbarrow of salt. Unfortunately. I believe the same thing goes for East. It's just Africa that doesn't have a propaganda machine. And for some reason, we're still too naive, but I believe we're going to get there. So, the gambling board. So we have a gambling board, we have a gambling industry in Namibia that is thriving, and that has that is going digital really fast. And this is where the discussion now around the discussion around gambling now becomes a very interesting one to have on a national level, because we know that this is an industry that has a very good return on investment for a country, but alcoholic beverages and and cigarettes and your vapes and all those things, it has its own it comes with a lot of revenue generation, but it also comes with a lot of burden for the Ministry of Health. Works very nice for NAMRA in terms of revenue collection, but it has a long-term effect for the Ministry of Health. In the very same way that inorganic fertilizer works perfecto for the Ministry of Agriculture, but long-term it has a lot of negative impact on the environment, which then becomes the Ministry of Environment's problem. We can't just solve a problem and not create more problems in the process, can we? So, today's discussion is going to be based on one thing, that is Namibia's gambling industry, and how we are at least going to navigate the challenges, not according to me, according to the authorities, like your Namibia's gambling board. Their role is to make sure that gambling is practiced responsibly. In the very same way that, okay, look, it's not a comedy show. It's not a comedy show. It's not a comedy. Okay, look, in the very same way, look, you know how drink responsibly is working out? Yeah. It's like, which is why I pointed out that, a responsible gambling is like a responsible drinking. One or two beers, excellent. You can just dance and do whatever it is that you do when you have one or two beers. But in access of it, you know, like they say, too much of anything is just a terrible idea. That's the same for food. It's the same for water. It's the same for, you know, I only found out a few months ago that there is such a thing as oxygen poisoning. Because the first thing I thought when I heard that term was like, what do you mean oxygen poison? Isn't oxygen what I need to breathe in for me to stay alive? They're like, yeah, pretty much. You need it, but in moderate. So as in everything else, including food, by the way, you need it in moderation. The same for beer. And it turns out, the same goes for gambling. There is such a thing as too much gambling. Now, one of the stories that you will be told in a lot of actually the whole country, or if not the whole world. This is one thing that I learned when I was living in Tura. People were getting paid like this time of the month and then swing by some gambling machine and gamble the entire salary without buying food or paying for water, electricity, all the utilities that they basically need for the month. Now, as ridiculous, if not funny or painful that sounds, these are real problems associated with gambling. Yes, it is an excellent source of revenue. In 2025, the projections made to, mid 2025 as to the amount of money that, that was projected to come out of Namibia's, gambling industry was about, 900 and something million. That's Namibian dollar. And, interesting enough, the amount of money that was made in revenue at the time, I have my glasses on, so I think I'm seeing the numbers correct, was somewhere between, was just somewhere in the north of 49.5 million, somewhere in the north of 49.5 million Namibian dollars. That's a decent amount of money coming from, revenue generation. Now, before you start saying, oh my God, this is brutal, guys, we don't manufacture bombs because there are countries, not to mention any names, that literally make death machines. Their entire economy is dependent on them blowing people up. So believe me, we have it way better. We have it way better. Way better. We deal with it anyway. Let's take a quick break and we'll continue on the other side. Now, my favorite motto of responsibly gambling coming out of South Africa, South African Responsible Gambling Foundation. Winners know when to stop. Look, I have never been addicted to cheese. What have I been addicted to? Minus food. Food is a serious addiction I'm still, battling with to this day. I'm hoping it doesn't end because, well, my love for food is top-notch. Now, the thing is, alcohol addiction is a serious thing. And there are certain conditions where you're told not to drink alcohol. Like, it's not recommended when you're driving. It's not recommended when you're, when one is pregnant. It's not recommended at a certain, until a certain age. The younger you are, the more terrible it becomes because alcohol is toxic, literally. And it's not very, brain cell friendly. Everyone that is honest and they drink alcohol will tell you that. It's not very, in the very same way that a cigarette is not very good for your lungs. But we smoke it anyway. That's the very, this one of the things that's very difficult to comprehend, about, human nature is like, we like problems, always. After giving you all this lecture about alcohol, on my way home, I'm picking me a six pack of beer for gaming. Human beings are fascinating, and we. Anyway, so let's take a quick break. But now, when we come back from the break, we are starting from Winners Know When to Stop. That is from South Africa's, South African Responsible Gambling Foundation. And they paid us a visit to sort of like give us a little bit of pointers on how to navigate the challenges that come with this wonderful revenue generation mechanism called the gambling industry. On the other side of the break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Let's continue. Now, betting, because I believe betting falls under gambling, and the technological part before we get to Winners Know When to Stop is that there are certain age limits that are associated there are certain requirements that one must meet as a consumer. And this is regulated here in Namibia by the Gambling Board of Namibia, that anyone that's running such an industry like your casinos, for example, or anything that is basically associated to gambling as as it's defined by the Namibian law, one as a consumer, and as an operator, they all have their own requirements, especially the operator. You cannot allow someone who is under 21, for example, to just pop up in a casino and start, doing whatever it is that they do in casinos. That's an interesting one. The closest I've been to a casino was at the entrance. When I saw the sign of no guns, and I was like, oh, I know it says no guns, but I have trust issues, so goodbye. One thing that's been seen, especially in terms of basically betting or gambling on a global scale, especially the biggest gambling industries like those ones that you find in the US, like Vegas is known as basically the global capital. I'm not sure if it still is the global capital of gambling. I think Vegas is the global capital of gambling and a whole lot of things. One thing that's been seen is that has been observed with winners, like lottery winners. That's what I was looking at. Mm-hmm. Now, we also have a lotteries board, We have a gambling board, lotteries board. Now, if you ask me, that's just the same WhatsApp group. You are talking about speculation. Now, basically gambling has an excellent source of revenue and affords a lot of people to that one in a million chance to become a millionaire. Jeez, okay. There are certain number, obviously there are certain amounts that can be won depending on what you're participating into. Now, I believe one of the biggest challenge now that is coming into the, that's coming into the industry is the digitization aspect of it. Now, for, obviously, like any industry, it needs, the more people you reach, the better. The more people participate, the better. But the thing is, it becomes, the lines between who is qualified and who is not, once you digitize things, become somewhat very tricky, especially in the world of sports betting. Yeah.
The real good chicken frozen mixed portions. Okay, Dorashi ke. Oma veravali nungwei. Nesenda. Omirongungwei nungwei. Woi tira imwe. Yo machine wo clover. Full cream. Ilo. Low fat milk UHT process. Iri mwa hamano moka pakete. Okay, Dora. Efele no mirongona tu na hamano. Nesenda. Omirongungwei nungwei. Oshoyo. E kilogram matiri natu. Do right brand macaroni. Omenashi ke. E dro mirongo hamano nambali. Nesenda. Omirongungwei nungwei. Enda tweti. Potinashi kongushu vio mafiku atano atula e. Odura oyotwe. Yangatashi hapu na ShopRite.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
So, apart from the wonderful revenue generation, apart from the wonderful revenue generation of the gambling industry, the unregulated part of it, if it's not properly regulated, it can cause a lot of harm, especially to young people. Now, for that, let's go to, Wits University? Yeah. Wits University in South Africa. Now, they put up one article that I spent a little bit of time with today going through that they put up this year in April. Now, the South African Responsible Gambling Foundation, has that motto where their motto is winners know when to stop. The very same thing can be, is more often said about alcohol. You know yourself. You know the effect that alcohol has on you. It's always important to assess yourself to know when you are getting in that dangerous territory of thinking you can beat everyone. Very important. Well, that's the same applies to gambling. You should, turns out, I can only imagine how difficult that is because you have to understand this is, working on a psychological level. And for some reason, anything that has hormones behind it becomes very, it's like, it takes control away from you. And the best example of this is when you are scared. When you are scared, adrenaline takes over. When adrenaline takes over, you can walk through fire. It's like you're demonic possessed. So, and pretty much the same thing happens. The same thing happens with gambling because it also has a lot of dopamine associated to it. And dopamine, it's a very wonderful feeling. It's a very wonderful hormone, but like everything else, in moderation, excellent idea. in a large quantities, terrible idea, especially at a certain age. Now, according to Wits University, research indicates that children's repeated exposure to gambling is associated with high odds or high likeliness of a gambling addiction in early adulthood. Uh-oh. So not only do you have to worry about, I'm seeing a lot of parallelism between this and I'll take you through it. I'm seeing there's a lot of correlation between, responsible gambling and responsible drinking. Because we all agree that, they are good in moderation, as in, as everything else. Actually, it's recommended you don't start. But, the Gambling Board of Namibia and the Namibian economy is like, please start. Now, the thing is, because there are a lot of opportunities that comes with it. If you are, if you have that one in a million chance of becoming a good, becoming the lucky winner, you could be financially sorted just like that. At least for about 5 years, because when it comes to lottery winners, it was pointed out that those, one thing that's been pointed out over and over by researchers is that lottery winners that win, less than 10 million US dollars, less than 10 million US dollars, most likely go broke in about 5 to 10 years. Now, how does one move from $10 million in US, multiply that by 16, if I'm looking at the whoa. Okay, that's a lot of money. But anyway, so the thing is, if you're one of those lucky winners, very good opportunities. But the thing is, as in everything else, regulation is very important. Driving is good. It takes you from point A to point B. But you need your law enforcement officers so that you don't go Vin Diesel in a public road. So, now your traffic officials for the equivalent of your traffic officials for the gambling industry would be your gambling regulators, like your gambling board, for example. They basically put the regulations out there, but they are not going to run around to see how old is this person. No, they don't have time for that. Have you seen their suits? Anyway, according to Wits University is pointing out here that so the first no-go when it comes to the gambling industry is make sure young ones are nowhere near it. And then again, we are back to one thing. The digitization. Because if it's digital, it's most likely accessible over smartphones. If it's accessible over smartphones, it can be accessed by people that are too young to be accessing it. The question is how much of our digital infrastructure, how much of the digital infrastructure do we control? That becomes, just like that, that's why I like to look at some of these things from a continental standpoint. Because, because now we have already connected South Africa and Namibia. And, the South Africans were here, last week. They were here to basically, being former conjoined twins that we are. They were here to tell us that, this gambling thing is an excellent source of revenue for the country. Excellent. A very good one. But if it's not regulated, it becomes a problem for the community. It creates a lot of addiction problems. And so regulation then is key. And regulation then is not enough. It's more like awareness. Awareness to consumers that, in the very same way that, beer or alcoholic beverage consumers are told, we're not saying you are under 18. I mean, you are in your 30s. Just go ahead and drink. But you have to understand that drinking and driving is going to get you killed. So don't do it. The equivalent of that. And, the same thing happens when you are driving. You have to be, what, at least 16 years of age for you to qualify for a driver's license. But you can drive at 9, but at that point then can even reach the pedals. Unless you are one of those kids that are growing like Breitbach. And these kids are, jeez, how old are you? I'm 18. You? 18? Yeah. Jeez, what have they been feeding you? Anyway, just back to this, and then we can come back to, you know, some of the... Let's just take it from here. Maybe you can just, you know, push it a little global. So the first no-go is, like alcohol and drinking, age very... like alcohol and driving and anything else that's basically addictive, basically. Let's just use alcohol as an example. Like alcohol, age is everything. Age is everything. The young ones, absolutely not. Un momento.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoewe ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
I mean, not very good at multitasking. But anyway, like alcohol, gambling's first requirement is a no-go for young people. And that's not a rule coming from the Gambling Board of Namibia. That's a rule coming out of, a research that has been done on the industry. So, the first part of the VITS article that I referred to earlier reads as follows. Research shows that children's repeated exposure to gambling is associated with high odds or high chances of gambling addiction in early childhood. The issue moves beyond policing screen time, placing the responsibility purely in parents' hands. So the that's the aspect that made me, you know, point out the, you know, the digitization of the industry. So now, the digitization of the industry. Now, the digitization of the industry and why it's important, you know, and why I keep pointing it out, is coming from two articles. One is the one that I just pointed out now, and the second one was when your country was basically celebrating late last year. Namibia's gaming sector is expected to generate about 948 million in revenue by the end of 2025. And that was just last year, Namibian, Namibian local media just going wild. I mean, which is a good thing. It's an exciting thing making all that amount of money from an industry. In 2025, Namibia's gaming revenue will reach, from last year, 55.79 million US dollars. I don't even know why they decided to put that in US dollars. Due to, it's from an external source, a German source, a Statista. Now, I don't know why we are getting these statistics from there, because maybe it's just not explained, properly here at home, which would be an excellent idea. Now, back to the digitization part. So at this point, responsible gambling becomes twice a headache thing to practice for a parent, because first of all, they have to watch out for themselves to make sure that they don't go and gamble the whole salary. And two, to make sure that, the second one is to make sure that their kids are not exposed at an early age to these facilities or these activities, because the more they are being exposed to these activities at a young age, the high chances they stand of being, of developing gambling addiction as soon as they reach early childhood, early adulthood. So it's a double responsibility on the parents. Now, that means it's a triple responsibility if you are a parent, you like gambling, and you work for the Gambling Board of Namibia. Now you have, or a police officer, or you work for these casinos, or any of these, or run any of these facilities that offer this service. Now you have to watch out for yourself and your loved ones. So, Wits University is right. The responsibility is in the hands of parents much heavier, but now we have a commercial break coming up. Continue.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
Welcome back. We continue. So, the issue moves beyond placing screen time, policing screen time, and placing the responsibility purely in parents, in the hands of parents. So, but I still believe, the very simple, it's complicated, especially for parents, is not only do you have to watch out for your chances of being swallowed by that addiction abyss in terms of gambling. Now you have to worry about all kinds of addiction, including alcohol and gambling and smoking, and this world is just brutal. We can survive. I think that's where the regulation now comes in. The system itself, according to Wits, needs to change to keep children out of harm's way. Aren't we doing the same thing about alcohol? How's that going? It's better to policy than just open the floodgates and let everyone just go bananas. Policing it is better than just saying, you know what, this whole policing is not working. Just let them go nuts. Teachers at school are going to have trouble. I mean, they already have issues with alcohol, with kids sneaking out to go and drink. Now, if you open the floodgates, it would all be worse. So the very same thing again applies to this whole gambling discussion. It's important to just realize that, okay, you know what? Everyone must do their part, because, yes, it's a good source of revenue, but, comes with its own challenges. Now, how we navigate this challenge must now go beyond the public official's responsibility or beyond a parent's responsibility. That's a painful one. Now, the system itself needs to change to keep children out of harm's way. This way, the key insight raised in the Wits Mandela Institute webinar, grooming minors through gambling like gaming practice. And that was the theme of the webinar. You know, Africans, every time that we gather to have a public discussion, especially of political or economical, we always come up with a theme. Now, Wits School of Law professor Michelle van Eck noted that mobile gaming environments A nearly $100 billion global industry could be grooming minors into gambling-like behavior. And South Africa's legal framework is inadequately responding to this. Oh, no. Oh, no. The digitization is an interesting part of this whole thing because, like every industry, rich is everything. But rich means in the 21st century is more electronic version of that activity. When you have, a widespread electronic version of gambling, well, it becomes a little bit difficult to police in terms of who it reaches and who it doesn't. Yeah. No, let's just wrap that up. Now, the harm is built in, not incidental. And although the VITS article is mostly looking at it from from a digital version, more like the electronic aspect of things, and speaking of things that one can get addicted to, gaming addiction is a real thing, as in video gaming addiction. And because you have video games that are very immersive, and I play video games, believe me, I will tell myself, you know what, just one more mission and I will do my laundry. That's 9 o'clock in the morning. By the time that you throw in those headphones, and if you use my, the platform that I use a lot when I'm gaming, then you know that you play a lot with Nigerians. I play a lot with Nigerians, and they're very I'm not sure if it's the accent that arrived to me via Mr. Ibu and Akina Ukwa, but I've made very good friends out of them. The thing is, once you throw those headphones in, it's like going out, it's like going out and telling your parents or your partner at home that, you know what, I'm just going to have a beer or two with the boys. I'll be back in 5 minutes. We both know he's lying. Because once you get there and stories start, it's 5-10 hours. He shows up at 3 o'clock in the morning with lipstick on his shirt. May his soul rest in peace. But, the thing is, gaming is somewhat the same way. And it's also addictive, but this is just interactive video gaming. So now again, interactive video gaming itself has its own addiction discussion. Now, when you take in things like interactive video gaming and introduce a gambling aspect to it, you have a psychological nuke on your hands. You know, the more I sit and look at all these things, the more I begin to realize just how difficult it is to be in public office. I feel pity for these guys every time that I just go through reports of what is expected of them. So now, as someone who is, works for the gambling board of Namibia now, your job generally is to make sure that people gamble responsibly. How the heck do you even do that? I know about regulations and drafting up policies, but I wouldn't be surprised to find that some of the people drafting the laws are themselves dealing with gambling addiction or alcohol, addiction. You are there drafting laws of don't drink and drive, but, with your whiskey and cigar on the side. Now I have a problem. hypocrisy is a little... The electronic version and, electronic version and focus more on gambling. On gaming, but gaming that has a gambling somewhat aspect to it. Now, like I pointed out earlier, the fact that video games, especially video games, are addictive, that's not something new. That's something that has been known for a very long time, that video games are addictive. And, wait, is that why? No, I haven't gamed in 2 days. I'm good. That's how it, you know. All right. When you talk about regulating something that is in the digital realm, it becomes somewhat of a very big problem for countries, developing countries, especially on the African continent. You know, I think India falls under developing country, but, their tech industry is light years ahead. Actually, that is a terrible, that's the wrong measurement. That's a measure of length, not duration. Now, you know, I don't have a lot of friends. Anyway, the South African Responsible Gaming Foundation, Responsible Gambling Foundation, and their motto, winners know when to stop. They do know one thing, that yes, gambling generates a lot of money for the country, but it also does come with a lot of challenges. Now, we could just decide to throw away the whole industry to protect people. Then we'll also have to throw away all the alcohol to protect people. And we'll also have to throw away all the food with all food additives that can literally cause cancer. And, at one point I was listening to one pastor who said, this world is so poisonous, all you just have to do is breathe and you're cooked. And it's not like you can hold your breath for forever. So just, live your life. Ouch. Oh, no. I recently found out that the most expensive form of steel, as in metal, steel, it's a form of steel that is, that was made before the 1940s. Because after the 1940s, we started, the Western countries started testing nuclear weapons. And it turns out from the time that I believe that was in early 1940s, it's the first, little boy and the other one that were detonated in Nagasaki and Hiroshima. That's 1945, August, somewhere there. So in the 1940s, with the testing of nuclear weapons, it turns out that altered the global atmosphere, not just for countries like France, the US, the British, that were carrying out all these all these tests. It was South Africa, by the way. It turns out it was all those explosions, and I think we have made over 500, if not over 1,000 nuclear detonation on land, nuclear detonation. Because there are some that have been done in the sea. That's just something else. Now, the thing is, it has altered the atmosphere. Now, because of that, it's very difficult to make, to make medical equipments that are, that must be free of radiation. There's a lot, there's more background radiation, what they call background radiation. It's basically, this is a type of radiation that is not lethal to you. And you have a lot of natural products that are emitting all this, background radiation. And one of those is, my favorite fruit, banana. Because it has a high potassium content. It's high potassium content. Now, so I eat bananas all the time and I'm perfectly fine. We eat bananas all the time. We're perfectly fine. We're fine, right? Okay. Anyway, you see, the thing is, because of the change in global atmosphere in terms of the level of background radiation, it has likely increased since humanity decided to start building nuclear weapons to defend itself from itself. And so human beings are so stupid. So we're setting the entire planet on fire so we can defend ourselves from each other. But we like to tell ourselves we are the most evolved. I mean, we are the smartest. No, we're not. We're the dumbest. We literally are setting the planet on fire to protect ourselves from each other. Anyway. Now, it's difficult to make medical equipment that need as low as possible, radioactive isotopes in it in the 21st century. Is after getting the iron ores from the ground, you have to burn them when you are refining them. To burn them, you have to pump in the furnace oxygen. The thing is, the oxygen, you are getting it from the air, and ever since we started doing all the nuclear tests, the air is contaminated with radiation. It has higher background radiation than it had before we started blowing nukes. And that, in turn, contaminates the metal itself that's being produced. So, as a result, a lot of countries, a lot of companies that make medical equipments that need as low carbon steel background radiation as possible, they have resorted to buying steel that is being extracted from ships that sank before, that sank before we started testing all these nukes. Basically, the metal ships that sank before 1940s. So if you can get to the Titanic, which sank in 1912, that steel is still radioactive, very fair for the production of medical equipment. Jeez, that's a serious gamble. We know what happened to the billionaires that went to see the Titanic. It's just a minute past the hour of five. If you just tuned in, this is Somran with Helmut and Dwight, and today's discussion is based on responsible gambling and what an interesting conversation it is to have. And the first no-go is young people. If you want to believe, Vits University, young people, keep them away. That's a no-brainer. Like, that's a very known, that's a known one. But the digitization of the industry itself is going to present, since we decided we're going to throw technology and AI into everything, you can imagine what challenging this is going to come, what challenges this is going to bring, especially for regulators. Especially since the regulators have become so lazy when it comes to drafting policies that the South African lawmakers were caught using AI to draft an AI policy. And they are not the first one, by the way. Both the public and private institutions have been caught overusing AI. It's nothing, there's nothing wrong with using AI. It's just that when you decide to basically, voluntarily use it as a replacement for your brain, becomes a little bit of a problem now, doesn't it? So, winners know when to stop. Now, my question now when I came across that motto is, we have been telling people drink responsibly for decades. People still get drunk and decide to drive. How is this going to be any different? Because you'll be telling people not to gamble their salary, but well, they're still just gonna go ahead and gamble. So, Dwight?
Marching.
So, are they marching?
Seems so. Well, they were marching before. Now they're apparently also locking people up. Marching. Nah, it just came in here with a punchline.
Locking people up?
Yeah, you know, mob justice. For whatever reason, for being a foreigner, which is 100% racist. No, really, 100%.
You know, it took me a while to understand why we have a category of politicians that are more often referred to as sellouts.
Is there a category?
Oh yeah, there's a whole category. Look, I believe, look, after the 2013 Edward Snowden files,
yeah,
I came to realize it's very difficult to defend people. You can't, make people aware of the reality. So, people, from the look of things, are most likely to go along with a lie than they will with the truth.
Mm.
Because, everything that we are complaining today about, digital security, Edward Snowden brought that up in 2013. It was like, look, we have, now, this was in 2013 when he was saying, we have a program called X-Key Score. And, believe me when I tell you, we don't care what operating system you are using. iPhone, Android. If we want something in your phone, we're going to get it.
Mm.
Like one of the things that he said in his interview was that as a systems administrator, when I was with the NSA, if I wanted to get in Obama's emails, I would have gotten in there.
Mm.
Now, that would have been a wake-up call for basically us to start asking our lawmakers reasonable questions about digital privacy. It was just a hype for a couple of months and then everything died out. And now we're talking about, oh, you know what? Well, Palantir is doing this. Well, really? You're only realizing that now?
And complaining about it now?
Now? So at this point, now you have to understand that before Snowden went public with those files, he was working for multinational corporations, weapons manufacturers, and the Secret Service. He was living in Hawaii. And one of the things he said was, you have to understand, I was living my dream, man.
Yeah.
I was living in paradise. I would have just decided, you know what? Let me just go along like everyone else. But he decided to go public with that information, risked his life. And everyone went, fine, we're good. Now, what do you think is the next person going to do? Do you think someone who is in the Secret Service, someone in the intelligence community in the USA, China, Russia, or wherever they find themselves, and they're looking at very disturbing information in relation to democracy, national or globally, do you think they're going to go public with it?
Not easily.
Nope. I'm not, because...
Not easily.
Nope. I'll just be looking at at Edward Snowden, and the only thing I'll be telling myself is, he gave you that information. What do you do with it? Now, is it going to be any different if I give you this information? Short answer, no. So, I'll just sit in Hawaii and then get paid. So, winners know when to stop. Do they...
No. I assume, Helmut, you listened to the South African presentation as well.
Unfortunately, yes.
And just for our listeners to know, in South Africa, they've classified gambling addiction as a disorder. As a mental disorder. Meaning, it's not something the person can switch off. Once it has been switched on, it is a very, very dangerous habit. I use the word dangerous primarily because I've heard the stories here in Namibia, how people gamble out a salary.
Yeah.
They go to...
I've heard those too.
They go to the hotels.
Yeah.
Not at your shabin, not at your bar.
Right.
No?
There are those that are doing that too. It's different depending on your level of income.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the same thing.
Yeah, the same thing.
Oh, yes. No, you're right.
Yeah.
Because I also knew someone You know these street gamblers?
Yeah.
The guys with the dice?
Yeah.
On the sidewalk?
Yeah, with the broken Afrikaans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew a person also who lost like considerable amount of a chunk of her salary at a game of chance, literally where the odds are stacked against you in that specific game. Not in a casino where you know, okay, it looks nice. At least I can have a good pina colada, have a coffee to drown my, you know, to drown my sorrows afterwards for losing X amount of money.
Yeah.
No. So across all walks of life, you see the particular problematic scenario of when, unfortunately, the consumers don't, you know, they don't get any interventions. Now, I'm surprised the South Africans realized early enough, after their independence, they realized early enough that gambling does have side effects. I'm surprised that it's an NGO that is backed up by an act. They started the NGO first, and then the act came about.
I mean, is that serious?
If you look at them, 60 million people, probably back in, what did he say? The McBride guy said back in 2000, they probably would have been 50 to 30 to 40 million, million South Africans. If you've got 40 million people, Hamilton, and there is a proliferation of gambling within your country.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you can go to Sun City, you can go to Gold Reef City, you can go to Durban, which also has a whole bunch of fancy casinos. Cape Town has a whole bunch of them. And it's just, you know, hotel on hotel on hotel with a casino on a casino on a casino outlet stacked in every particular dimension. Now, you're going to ask yourself the question. No matter which particular major metropolitan area of South Africa you go, you will find a casino. And you will find a gambling activity present over there. Now, you will definitely find consumers of various spending capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even count on my hands anymore, on my fingers anymore, basically. The stories I've heard of people here in Namibia, for example, who get paid at the end of the month and then they take that salary and just go into a casino, just like that.
Yeah.
They just get paid and they just go.
And we go ahead
just
and
for you to see them tomorrow morning. Just for you to see them tomorrow morning.
Say, hear me, I believe.
Yeah, petrol. Groceries, their children's school fees, their mortgages, their car stuff.
Look, gambling has let's just say addiction in general. Addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs addiction or the gambling addiction, because the key word here is addiction. It's a high that you're chasing,
yeah.
That you start with by being in control of, and then the hormones basically take over. The thing is, just like any addictions, once it takes over, you need help. And just like any addiction that have, you know, just like any addiction, once, you know, once the substance have taken over, you know, part of solving a problem is first admitting that there is a problem. And I have never, you know, I've never met anyone who was addicted to something that was just from day one decided to wake up and say, you know what, I'm addicted to this thing, I need help. We all say, you know what, I'm fine, I'm in charge here.
Mm.
I can control this. There's nothing wrong with me. It takes a very long time. It takes a while and a lot of courage, which is why I respect people that actually, you know, just sit and admit that, you know what, I need help here. First of all, generally, especially with our gender, you know, just culturally, emotionally, it's like we are wired not to ask for help. And that's very, you know, that's true for all kinds of help, including addiction problems. I'm in charge, but deep inside, you're rotting.
The funny thing also is that in Namibia, the doctor that was speaking, you also heard her, right? The doctor that I tried quizzing a lot about in terms of asking them for data about, can they categorically say they classify gambling in Namibia
as a disorder?
Yeah. And her explanation obviously was one based upon, well, as I said, Dwight, the person shows up here with other, you know, the obvious, I don't want to say symptoms, but the obvious ailments.
Yeah.
That they're suffering from. They show up with something else here in front of you, and then you find out when you look at as she explained it, going deeper into their lives, obviously the sessions, the therapy sessions, then they realize the person has a gambling addiction. And the gambling addiction is sort of like, you remember some bees or some wasps do that
with their
antler? No, not antler. What's the word? Because I'm now thinking in Afrikaans, angel, you know, the...
okay, come on, engel.
No, angel, not engel. Engel is angel. Oh. Angel is that thing of a scorpion and a wasp and a bee that...
We have a commercial break.
Yeah.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 4 kg real good chicken frozen mixed portions for 209 Namibian dollars 99. 6x1 liter clover full cream or low fat milk UHT process for only 136 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And 3 kg right brand macaroni for a low 62 Namibian dollars 99. Deals valid until 5 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana unongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doini nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. 16 into the hour of five. So, Engel.
You're back to the Angel, Helmut. Okay. Angel, not Engel. Engel is angel. Angel is that. What's that word, man? How can I forget my English today? But that.
Let's call it an injection.
That stinging function of those insects and arachnids.
Yeah.
So, it's got this, it's literally what you could hear from the doctor herself specifically was that it looks like the moment this bug bites you or stings you, the moment you get stung by this gambling bug, it's not something you can get rid of very easily. Yeah. Now, the interview I obviously quickly did with the organizer, one of the representatives of the organizers, what's the guy's name? But he highlighted the reason for why they are having this conference primarily at the time was that they realized that there's a massive proliferation of gambling and betting platforms, meaning it's become more accessible to a consumer
thanks to digitization,
just the digitization aspect as well, and now it's now reaching so much more people. So I was obviously trying to understand the discussion from a perspective of, okay, are you doing this, you know, I don't know how much of you remember the discussions, the national discussions, the stakeholder engagements about the abortion scenario, where there was the religious counter movement saying, no, a life is sacred.
Yeah.
If that woman, doesn't matter how she got pregnant, is pregnant, the child must be born. And then the women's activists and women's sexual reproductive advocates were saying, it's our bodies, it's our rights, you know, which is a very good reason, basically. I mean, women make a very strong case in that regard. But I was hoping to hear from someone that would come in with a religious perspective just to say, okay, okay, now we know who's also in the room. But no, there was no such perspective. So I was slightly disappointed. But my major disappointment was literally realizing that the gambling board was not present.
Yeah. You did mention that you asked that question, that we're here talking about responsible gambling and the major regulatory authority of the topic we are discussing is not here.
Yeah. And it doesn't help. Ministry of Environment's people were there.
Yeah.
Proxying on behalf of the gambling board. And the gambling board is not there. Now, here's the weird thing now. Now, the guy that was sitting next to me, who said he was from the National Planning Commission, who kept asking questions about data and statistics as well. Now, he kept speaking about the act says this, the act says that. And I asked him, and I showed him, you know, in between the sessions, I told him, listen, my guy, the act doesn't speak anything to some sort of a intervening function, because the act itself, the Gambling Act,
yeah,
a Gambling and Entertainment Act, basically just speaks at pure administration of the sector.
That's it.
That's it. Register here. Here's the annexure for this form. These are your fees. These are your fines if you transgress. This is what you need to do if you have multiple business outlets and you wish to have multiple.
It focuses more on the licensing.
Meaning administration.
Yeah, very, 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 very,
pure
very.
Your administration. Now, this is also one of the things that then leads to the next discussion, Hamud. So, during lunch,
yeah,
I unfortunately sat at the desk of the two South African guys with the Matlala guy. And he's got no relations to Kat Matlala in South Africa, just so that you know, Helmut. So no puns, no jokes.
Yeah.
So I sat with Matlala on the left, and I sat with Mike McBride on the right during the lunch break. And then I asked him, listen, guys, under which ministry's mandate do you guys fall as responsible gambling South Africa? And then McBride said, we fall under a commerce ministry. The Department of Commerce or something, or Department of Trade or something in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
In our scenario, Hamid, where does gambling and betting and casinos fall?
Tourism, environment. Aren't we just geniuses?
Oh, my goodness, never fear. Now, do you know what's the sad thing about that? Nah?
Yeah.
About that thinking. Because I also asked, the other guy I asked, ask someone else primarily, why is this function under an environment, forestry and tourism ministry?
Yeah.
A ministry that clearly has a mandate over the natural environment, but technically does not know how to basically administer and govern a commercial environment. Yes, tourism is commerce. Let me not throw that away.
It is very commercial.
It's very commercial. Tourism is actually all about commerce.
And it turns out we are very good at it.
That even the former UN tourism organization guy came and said, we are modeling the tourism sector
template. Textbook example.
On you, Namibia. You guys are the champions of the sector. Yet, for some reason, we put gambling and tourism, gambling and betting and casino regulations under tourism. Because here's the thing, Helmut. When you go to a casino right now, are you going to go see a whole bunch of European tourists jam-packed in it?
Yeah, look, the thing is, most tourists are using urban centers as just a transit route.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Helmut. Thank you. You're putting another cherry on a cake. I thought there was only going to be one cherry. Four.
Yeah.
Thank you that you pointed that point out. Do you know why, Helmut?
Yeah.
Okay, second scenario that they also just do. If they stay in these major hotels of Windhoek, ne?
Yeah.
They're going to just stay to rest.
Not to gamble.
Helmut, sometimes ne, if you just go and see what's the sort of like the terms and conditions here locally, ne, you must have some sort of a membership card. They don't just allow you through. Sometimes. You can be 100 years old. And you can have $1 million in your bank account. But in some cases, you see some of these casino establishments literally say, listen, members.
Members only.
Members to a certain extent. Yeah, you can go and sit at the machine and, you know, waste $5. Yeah, sure. You know,
but there's some certain like corners you cannot access unless you're a member.
You need to have a membership scenario.
Yeah.
So even then, they know they've brought in a loyalty program for customers, for consumers. And in many cases, many of these customers are locals.
Yeah.
They are locals.
Now, the thing is, when we talk about, you know, responsible gambling from a local standpoint, I don't think much of a conversation is going to be in the size or, you know, on the side of, you know, large gambling establishments. We are going to focus more on either the digitized versions of them or the local gambling machines. Like, you know, I think your jackpots. You can say, you know.
No, but jackpots are mostly in where? In shebeens and in bars?
Yeah. And they're causing their own problems.
Yeah. Why would you say that? Why would you say that?
No, look. Look.
help us understand what problems. Okay, no. What problems happened there?
No, no. Look, think of it this way. Just, you know, just look at gambling in general. Countries that have gambling, gambling as an industry on a national level, they, you know, they understand one thing that they are very, honest about. And that's the exact same thing that we're seeing with South Africa. Mm. The gambling, like just any, gambling as an industry is a very good source of revenue generation. But like any industry, it also comes with its own challenges. Take, for example, breweries. Mm. Alcohol beverage industries generate a lot of revenues, but at the same time, you also have to put, you know, it. When you look at it in terms of dealing with the challenges, which is why I'm calling it challenges, not disadvantages, because now the positive is that you have a lot of revenue generation coming out of the alcohol brewing institutions, but there's also a lot of drinking and driving associated with, and there's a lot of alcohol addiction associated with it. Mm. So at this point, the conversation then goes beyond policy. It goes, it leans heavily in the direction of awareness to the end consumer than to the policymaker. Because, as a policymaker, we can even equate this discussion to the ministry, Namfisa and the Ministry of Finance discussion they had on a lot of civil servants and how they are, a lot of them are, some of them are drowning in debt.
Yeah.
So then the conversation became a part of, is this a problem of the individuals or entities dispensing the service of financial, financial institutions?
Yeah.
Is it their problem?
Of the microlenders,
exactly, of the microlenders.
Is it a fault of the microlenders? Is it
a fault of microlender or the consumer?
Just to have an ad saying, hey, listen, Helmut, I can give you up to 30,000 in a quick cash loan if you meet terms and conditions, one day turnaround time for approval.
Now, the question that popped out of there is there anything that a regulatory authorities like NAMFISA can do to make sure that micro lenders or just the consumers themselves, maybe on the side of the ministry, depending on the ministry they work or public entity they work for, can they be regulated to make sure that they don't pour all the money, just go around borrowing above what they can be able to pay back?
Mm.
Then that discussion quickly became one of now traversing the line, basically, traversing the line between, between regulating your citizens and invading their privacy.
Mm.
It quickly became that. And then at that point, it became, very obvious that you can only regulate someone so much. At some point, you just can have to, unless you want to invade their privacy, the best you can do is awareness. That's all. If you look at I believe that's what most of the take for example, most of the the regulatory bodies like NAMFISA are going through. They can only regulate the micro lenders or institutions that are dispensing the service. And the employers that are paying the individuals for the jobs that they do. They can only regulate them so far.
Yeah.
But when it comes to their money and where they spend it and what they spend them on, how do you regulate someone on that? You can't, because they'll be telling you to your face, it's my money, I can do what I want to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be right. Now, whether or not that's something that is harming them is a whole different discussion that you're going to have. I believe that's where the discussion of awareness now begins to pop up. And when it comes to, now coming to jackpots, I don't remember last time I played around with that, but here's the thing.
Mm.
Yeah. I have seen.
Have you won, Helmut?
Terribly lost. At $10, my 10 fat cakes, they were $1, $1 at a time. Biggest loss of my life. Now, the thing is, I've seen.
Don't tell me you played during lunch. Why would you equate a fat cake to the $10 you lost? You played during lunch, ne?
Yeah, man. Okay. Is that on 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's okay.
Now, here's the thing. The thing is, I've seen people celebrate after winning, some reason, $1,000 in jackpot. And they were dancing and like, really? $1,000? Okay. Anyway, but here's the thing. That person got an opportunity. One in a million opportunity, but they got an opportunity by getting $1,000 out of it.
Mm.
But I have also seen people win $1,000 or maybe 500 to 1,000, whatever amount of money, depending on the maximum the machine is able to dispense out for the maximum winner.
Yeah.
And they just turn around and put all of it back in an attempt to make more of it. And as a result, lost all of it.
Yeah, because you just explained what is the disorder?
Yeah.
They see that there's an opportunity to win. It's a game of a probability.
Yeah, it's chance and probability.
It's the probability is 1 in over 1,000,000 for you to win. Because you don't know what the combinations are.
Yeah, no, you don't.
Because you literally don't know what the numbering combinations are.
Yeah.
Now, the downside is, now they see, okay, I lost the first $10. Okay, let me try again the next $10. And so that they just keep feeding the machine. Over and over, but no payout happens. And then they come back tomorrow again when they've sobered up and they go like, can't I have a refund? And they start try to argue with the bar lady.
Yeah.
The bar lady tells them, but you knew that thing swallows your money.
Yeah.
What did you expect?
And throw in, oh boy, this is bad. Because now once you throw in, so then it will not be something that is unheard of, or it's not something that will come as a surprise for one to grapple with both a gambling and alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
So double trouble.
Well, it's not to say that the person has an alcohol problem, Helmut. I don't want to sound so severe on people who consume a little bit, but yeah, coupling decisions about your finance, about throwing just money away.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you can throw money away on buying food that you don't eat a lot, ne?
Look, I throw my money on 6-pack of beer. I've never showed up drunk. And I don't think there are a lot of people in my life that will tell you what I look like when I'm drunk. Because they have never seen me. Some of them to this day still ask me, do you even drink? I'm like, you mean water?
Have you ever had a beer in your life?
Yeah, have you ever had, yeah, it's just that it's something I like to keep control on. As in, I know what's the maximum. Maybe what helps me is I don't go out. So, I have a check on it.
Yeah.
So for, because one thing that my homies like to tell me is that, no, you would be saying that if you were one of those people that if you're one of those people that go out. It has, there's something about being around, peers and surrounded about a bunch of, bottles, and then you just want to go on and on and on. But at home, all I just have to do is open the fridge, maybe open one, barely even finish, maybe fall asleep and then finish it
throw
in the morning.
Throw it away.
Throw it away. Not a chance.
That's not, I throw away. Yeah. I'm the last person to invite to a bar, guys.
Yeah, okay. Maybe wine, because wine, the next day, is not going to taste the same.
Oh, no, if you forget it, yeah. If it has been exposed to air too long, yeah. Yeah, it just tastes horrible.
Yikes. I left mine in a glass, and that thing is wide open the whole night. It's going to tear out your tongue. But the thing is, awareness is going to be the name of the song here.
Yeah.
In the very same way that you can with, because you have to understand that you have a good source of revenue that you don't want to, to lose, which also have a very good and albeit very, very, very limited way of giving people opportunities in terms of winning.
Yeah.
But, and people can participate.
Yeah.
You can't run around telling people you can, you can't drink that or you can't eat that because, well, they allowed to do, they can do whatever they want. But you want to have a healthy population. Otherwise, you're going to have, it will be good news for Namra in terms of revenue generation, but it will be a terrible idea for, it will be a terrible news for the Ministry of Health. Because now we will have to bring up a lot of psychological experts to help deal with the problem. And believe me, those experts and their sessions are not cheap.
But it seems that these particular therapists, they can intervene in a certain way, Helmut, specifically if there is a structure to an organization.
Yeah.
Now, the engagement, unfortunately, in that conference, which was the day one about lay of the land, has we seen such case studies of Namibians suffering from this particular disorder, which is a definite yes, but you can't say how many Namibians there are.
Because we are terrible with numbers.
We are terrible at keeping statistics or data. And then the scenario of, okay, what other damage has there been, or what other impacts have there been in the broader Namibian society, which is also something that cannot be measured because these guys don't show up for therapy and they don't say that they've got issues and they don't say how extensive their problems are and they don't say how much money they lose per month and they don't say what havoc that wreaks on their specific families. They don't say specifically what strain it puts their loved ones under, and they don't say the community, sort of like impact that household impact has on the community in the street. So, Namibia is literally like at a infancy stage. The weird thing, Helmut, that stems from this is that Ministry of Health was there, represented by two officials, and then there was Ministry of Environment. And Ministry of Trades people were not there, definitely. Because clearly, as you can see, second year going into the 8th administration, we don't know where commercial activities fall under. Is it under Industries, Mines, and Energy? Or is it under
International
Relations and Trade? Sorry, Hamoud. There's another question you've got to factor into that statement you're going to say now.
Yeah.
The same former ministry, the defunct Ministry of Trade and Industry, had a directorate known as Consumer Protection. Now, let's spitball. Where do you think that division would fall under in relation to the context of this discussion that we've just been having.
Holy cow. Definitely not mines and energy.
Definitely not
international relations and trade.
Exactly. So it shows you we technically needed a ministry by itself.
Yeah.
A ministry of commerce, not a ministry of trade and industry. You can take away the trade and industry name, but we needed a commerce ministry that has to deal with commercial activities.
Yeah.
With manufacturing associations, corporate associations, business lobby groups and the likes. Now, who are they going to go talk to? The one minister has to basically host welcoming parties for international visitors. The other minister has to basically run around and, you know, try and literally kill off all metaphoric and literal fires because of the block plus block equals unblock strategy of Trump. So, in that sense, when you now get back into your train of thought, Helmut, consumer protection, which is basically what the South Africans now showed us in that audios, is at the heart of the discussion.
Consumer protection.
You were still going to say something before I interjected there with that idea.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to take you back to the to part of your point where you said, where you talked about a lot of like people that are on the therapy side of this discussion, trying to help someone that genuinely needs help.
Yeah.
And the problem that they are telling the the doctor is not somewhat adding up. And by using their expert skills, the doctors basically do their final assessment and realize that this person has an addiction problem.
Yeah. And they're not being forthcoming.
Yeah.
And they're not being open about this addiction or this affliction, basically. Because you can only call it an affliction or they are suffering. You know, you have to use all these euphemistic terms.
To beat around the bush.
Basically. Because you have to look after the person's fragile state of mind because they're an addict.
I think culture has also a role to play here.
Mm.
Therapy is not something that we are very good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. We are not very good at that. Like, let me just say, talking about personal problems, especially men, we are not very good at that. And Africans are even worse because much of it is a cultural component. So, sitting in front of a total stranger who I paid a lot of my money to pour my personal, because my personal information, my personal, feelings or my personal, troubles that I'm going through to this total stranger. Don't get me wrong, they are trained to help you in there. But, opening up, it's not easy. I think that's psychologists know that. It's not every day that just someone shows up and just to point out that, you know what, this is the problem. This is the problem that I'm dealing with. Please, how can I deal with it?
Yeah.
More often, we just beat around the bush. I'm not addicted. And I've had people blame witchcraft why they cannot spend their money responsibly. My village people, no, they are not. First of all, unless Jägermeister is your village people, which last time I checked, you are not German.
Yeah, we don't have any deers or elk in our country.
No, we don't.
Yeah. We have kudu and eland, you know.
And
Springbok, you know.
And that's meat, not your village people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, every time that we are confronted with something that's not, that's somewhat shunned on or more like frowned upon by society, we like to give it all kinds of names so we don't have to deal with it. I think that's where professional comes in because they are trained, I believe, in a way that they can slowly navigate you until you reach that point where you'll basically admit, first of all, to yourself and then them that, you know what? There's an elephant in the room here.
Mm.
This is the problem that I'm dealing with. Because for those of us that are, that are not experts at that navigating and the navigating you to reach that point where you have to admit to yourself that you have a problem. It's either now, if you come to Helmut, my first go-to move is sarcasm, and that's not going to end well.
Helmut, you're going to roast the person on top of the issues. Let me help you with your explanation as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I've realized after also going to, annually going to a doctor, because suddenly Dwight shows up here with flu. But this year's flu is just suddenly too powerful or more powerful than last year's flu.
Yeah.
Or suddenly Dwight doesn't understand why he's suffering from certain particular, ailments, but there's a flu involved. Yeah. So I sat there the one day, in the middle of last year. In my doctor's surgery, and I sat there thinking to myself, I'm like, my doctor will never know what's actually wrong with me if I don't open my mouth.
Yeah.
He will never know. That man will be sitting there guessing, and he'll write a prescription on guesswork if you, the patient, isn't technically not, if your honesty level is literally on the level of Jesus. You have to be biblically honest now to tell him everything that's wrong with you so that he can actually know how to approach whatever ailments you suffer from.
Yeah, look, and I never really understood how dangerous that is, and not just to you as a patient.
Yeah,
it's dangerous for you, but it's also dangerous for them, because if they prescribe something that is wrong and you end up with some health issues, and you end up, in a condition worse, or that is worse than you were, they could lose their license.
Not so easily. Who's gonna say what? How much?
Autopsy.
Yeah, and with that, autopsy where?
Where in Namibia?
Okay, it seems now that the police supposedly have some sort of a game in order on autopsies, for inquiries and for investigations. But let me ask you again, Helmut.
Yeah.
If it's not under certain particular dubious circumstances that the police might suspect something, let's say the first person on the scene to respond to an emergency situation is a paramedic, or it is a doctor by chance, the doctor technically can certify and basically give some sort of a report to the police, and the police never got the opportunity basically to treat any kind of a death as a suspicious death. The other thing I debated once on a WhatsApp group with this WhatsApp group with journalists that I'm on. The one journalist says, yeah, there's just too many suspicious reports of suicide. The police, and I'm paraphrasing some of the words, but the word I'm going to use also in it is literally something that the one journalist used. Yeah, it seems that the police are just forever useless. And then I asked him, why would you say that? Because it clearly says, you can read at the bottom of the report, the police says they are busy with their inquiry. He says, yeah, but how many of those inquiries have actually sort of like been closed up or run their course or stuff like that? And then the person then goes on to say, basically, sometimes you can see that there were other factors at play. And then I asked them, listen, are you the police? Are you the police?
Other factors at play?
That's what I'm asking. Are you the police? Were you there? What do you want to say, basically? Because in many cases, people treat the work that the police, unfortunately, and I'm not defending you guys, the police, because you guys have also, you guys have literally dropped me on the one time. A couple of times. So, I'm not defending you guys, but just, so that people understand the processes, basically, and the thinking as well.
A couple, huh?
The police, there's a handful of people in this in a country, Helmut, that have authority on announcing a death. It's either a religious leader.
Yeah.
It's either a medical leader. It's either a medical specialist or an expert. It's either a legal person, and it's either the police. There's only a handful of people in the society that can, you know, basically say, because of this position I own in a community situation, this, you know, this is the events that led up to this person's demise. Straightforward.
Yeah.
Now, if you are Jack and Jill from the kindergarten, you are suspects number one and two. You're not the authorities in the discussion. If you're the wife, your husband passed away, you're the suspect. If you're the husband, your wife passed away, you're the suspect. If you're the kids and the parents passed away, all of you are suspects. Just so that you know. Sorry, guys, for the dramatization there. But that's basically how it flows. It's straightforward stuff.
You know, I am leaning on awareness. The same reason why I think the debt discussion for mostly civil servants that was ahead a few weeks ago by Namfisa and Minister of Finance. Mm. The reason why I'm bringing up the awareness is because, look, therapy, I didn't know about therapy until I went to school.
I didn't know about therapy in Namibia because I only watched it on TV.
Exactly.
I only saw it on TV. I actually didn't even know that Namibia probably did not have psychologists.
It's predominantly a Western concept.
Let me rather say, you can assume South Africa has it.
Yeah.
And you can, in many cases, assume if South Africa has this thing that you see on the TV,
yeah,
Namibia doesn't have it.
Look, the thing is, okay, maybe we have some versions of it in different cultures across Africa, but the way that it's practiced today in terms of just sitting in front of a total stranger and pouring out your innermost emotions,
yeah,
is something that we have to transition into.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm making that point is something that early last year, I remember talking about, you know, early last year, early this year, talking about HPV and its prevalence.
Mm.
I came across an article from the World Health Organization. It was published in 2015. The article was on cervical cancer, common amongst African women. Cervical cancer is caused, according to the 2015 article from the World Health Organization, cervical cancer is caused by sexually transmitted human papilloma virus, HPV, which is most common in viral infection of the reproductive tract. It infects younger age groups as a result of early sexual activity, multiple sexual partners, and exposure to other sexually transmitted diseases. Now, here's the thing. There are more than 100 types of HPV, which at least 13 are cancer-causing. Two types of HPV cause 70% of cervical cancer. Now, the thing is, according to the World Health Organization's estimate at the time of publishing this article, HPV's infections cost approximately 68,000 cases of cervical cancer each year in Africa. Now,
there are a few fatal, no?
It's cervical cancer. That's all you have to know.
No, it depends on each person's particular reaction, Helmut. The person can be saved. I say saved because the saving is literally cutting a hole in you. It's literally cutting a chunk out of you, which is basically these cancerous cells.
Yeah.
But I also understand why. What's that treatment that women
go through? Radiation?
Huh?
Is it a radiation?
Oh. No, pap smear. When they have to go for pap smear. I remember being a first-year student, or not a first-year, being a full-time student, basically.
Yeah.
On university here in Windhoek. They tried running these campaigns, basically, for the female students.
Mm-hmm.
We also have to acknowledge that at a particular moment between 19 and 25...
Yeah.
The prevalence for sexual activity also gets a lot higher.
We don't talk about that. Again, that brings us to open discussion on some of these topics that are considered a taboo.
Yeah, but that's must now between the parents and the kid must now. Because the kid, that young adult, would definitely be talking about all the styles and all the antics and all the boyfriends and girlfriends they've had with the friends.
Yeah.
And if it's siblings, they'll probably share like small tidbits of something.
Share with sibling. That's the worst mistake you can make.
Information. Yeah, I know, because a sibling will go like, sibling, mom, are you kidding? Mom, listen to this guy.
They will turn the whole thing into a national anthem. Helmut has a girlfriend.
And then the ancestors plus the whole family has to come and meet you.
Yeah. Now, look, the reason why I brought up that, World Health Economic, World Health Organization 2015 stats on cervical cancer is because, everything in relations to sexual intercourse is a taboo on the African continent. But here's the thing. These are serious diseases that are causing harm. So it feels like we are cornered here culturally. We're going to have to, to remove the cloak of cultural obscurity to start having honest discussions on this, which I can only imagine how difficult that would be. And, because it's about saving a life here. And also, if you understand biology, and we were all young at any point, we know that whether you like it or not, at a certain age, kids are going to be sexually active. Like it or not. So it's either you basically sit them down and navigate the, give them pointers on how to navigate that dangerous life, and it is dangerous, or you can just pretend like, you know what, there's no way that, there's no way my boy will do that. Yeah, right. Of course, there's no way he'll do that. He's just my sweet boy. Uh-huh. Sweet boy, my behind. Look, it's not just these topics. Now, you can only imagine a father, a respected member of a society, it's either a head of a religious organization or a head of a family, a head of a traditional authority, having to face the reality that they have some kind of addiction they're dealing with. That is not going to be easy. I mean, it's difficult for a nobody like Helmut. Now, imagine for someone with a reputation, public reputation, with a public profile.
For gambling.
Exactly.
Yeah. This person, everybody knows he gambles or she gambles.
It's just, they'll just be telling you, no, you know what? I don't have an addiction. I'm good.
No. But when you send them to the therapist, the public knows.
Yeah.
It's the moment they go to the therapist doesn't know this person.
Yeah.
This person is also now going like, I must clam up. I must be defensive as hell. Why must I share everything with the therapist? Another therapist has to walk around with literally a crowbar trying to open up in the discussions through questions, each and every onion peel to understand what's the real person hiding in there.
There's a crowbar.
If people don't know, do you know what's the worst thing?
Yeah.
And this is sometimes just from having conversations with some people who are fearful of therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And you even see this from watching shows and documentaries online as well. In many cases, the therapists, what's that guy's name that the Diary of a CEO guy interviewed? Dr. K. Yeah. Now, Dr. K, he literally highlighted that in many cases, the people clam up.
Yeah.
When they come to him, it's his job to open up the person.
Oof.
Basically to see who's the person sitting in front of me. What are they going to say? What do they want to say? What are they going to share?
Mm-hmm.
What do they want to share? And the downside of such a particular engagement usually is you can definitely see that this is more than one therapy session going to be. Now, if you play it smart, if you're listening right now in your car, dear listener, and you got to go to your therapist probably tomorrow. This word of advice is what Dwight can give you. Be honest from minute one. If they ask you, how do you feel? Say, I feel bad. And if you say why, just explain why. Just be honest par excellence. Do you know why? Because you don't want to pay for more than one therapy session.
That, but you don't want that.
I'm giving you the best consumer advice.
Believe me.
Be honest, straightforward. Be with your doctor even. Just be honest up front. Tell him everything that's wrong with you so that he sees, okay, what must be penalized now. For the therapist, okay, we made a lot of breakthrough. You don't have to come back next week. But we might have to see again. Then you know, good shorter. You did well.
Because if you delay it, if you delay, you just keep getting paid.
It's just your pocket. It's just your pocket.
Who designed this?
It's just your pocket. No, but look, Helmut, it's literally the same thing about the microlenders you explained there.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong for them, and it's nothing wrong about doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists.
Yeah.
They are obviously there for the benefit of us, Namibian society. The microlender is definitely there also for the benefit of someone.
Yeah.
Which is also in the society. Now, the downside is you can sometimes see the rhetoric, the wording specifically. Now, for example, why haven't a stand-up, I almost said stand-up comedian.
What do we do?
Why haven't a standing committee from the National Assembly gone and asked the question, why must you have more than one expert appointment as a consumer, whether it be with your bank, whether it be with an accountant? Why must you have more than one? I'm putting that out there, Hamid, because you can clearly see that the microlenders literally try to help you with a need that's right now.
Yeah.
Now, who doesn't say that's one of the people that obviously complained to these MPs that came up with this motion is probably also not a gambler.
That's the point I tried to make earlier, that for all we know, the legislators themselves are putting together all these laws that will regulate the safe way to participate in this industry.
Yeah.
Could be grappling with these issues themselves.
Yeah.
So it's something that doesn't really know any boundary.
Yeah.
So now for someone who is, how do I put this? For parents now, it becomes a double trouble, or more like for a regulator, it becomes a double trouble, because not only do you have to watch out for yourself, you also have to watch out for your, for your kids or any, for young family members in your family.
Mm.
And the issue here is, it's balancing the positive part of the industry, which is the revenue generation, and the negative part of it, which is if it's not regulated properly, you find you are going to deal with a lot of issues that are going to come out as a result of people participating in this industry.
Yeah.
Now, here's the when it comes to regulating, you can only regulate to a certain extent. Take for example, the gambling board, and they can just work on like you just pointed out, their role is mostly administrative.
Yeah.
So they're just working on licensing and making sure that the institutions that are that have the machines or that are dispensing the service, they meet the requirement of registration, age and, limit, and all those things. So that is that's excellent regulation. The biggest problem, because when we are talking about it from a responsible gambling, we have gone beyond the the service dispensation. We are on the consumer side.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that they participate and benefit from it, but not to the point where it's causing harm to them.
Yeah.
Then we are back to the discussion of microlenders and civil servants that was head by Namfi's Ministry of Finance. So you are now on the consumer level. Once you are on a consumer level, you are on a thin line. You are at the border between protecting someone from harm and invading their privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? Watch everyone every time they get into a casino? And what are you going to do?
Go and tap them on the shoulder. You've been sitting here for 30 minutes.
Yeah, you've been sitting here for 30 minutes. You have spent this much money.
Please get up.
This month you got paid this much. You walked in here with this much. You have already gambled 70% of it. Please get out of here and go home. That's going to be... People are going to be exchanging blows.
The worst part, Ahmad, is still, the gambling board not being present.
Yeah, that is a terrible thing.
The reason why I asked the question in terms of why is this conference happening? One of the other answers was obviously potentially to set up a report after all stakeholder inputs were assessed.
Yeah.
And then from this report to possibly see, because I kept asking, will this lead to a law change? Helmut?
Mm-hmm.
How long does a law change take in Namibia?
Depending on...
If it's not grey listing threat level, happens within a calendar year.
If it's grey listing threat level, it happens really fast.
Yeah.
Really fast. It's
not grey listing. So on a basis primarily of looking at if you allow things to be, and it's not on the level of a UNESCO with the National Arts Fund and National Arts Council guys, which basically said, listen, we got the money, but you guys have to speed up this process.
There's this legislation that is making us question everything that, how safe is our money going to be? And if something goes south, who are we going to hold it responsible?
Yeah.
Speaking of money and who are we going to hold it responsible? Dude, Senegal's situation is worse. You know, Mozambique.
Mozambique was bad.
Yeah, I thought Mozambique was bad. Mm. Because Mozambique, it was 2 point something billion.
Mm.
Senegal, it's 7 billion.
US, that they owe.
Yeah, that was borrowed undisclosed ways.
It can't be undisclosed. Your finance minister flew there.
No, that's to
go and sign.
That's why experts are even asking IMF, you guys must know something. Because there's no way on God's green earth you did not know.
That they were just borrowing without paying back.
Uh-huh.
Well.
They kept telling them, you know what, our debt to GDP ratio is in this percentage. They kept, putting it under, you know, under 70-something percent.
Mm.
Except it's not, it's way above 100%.
Yeah, cooking the books, Helmut. We all know the phrase. It's cooking the books.
It's 7 billion. I'm like, you know what, Mozambique? I thought you, compared to Senegal, you guys are a couple of angels.
Yeah, Mozambique was doing the anti-corruption, don't worry. On an anti-corruption level. Yeah. But on that note, yes, David is here, so he's giving us ultimatums. On that note, guys, let's see each other again, same time, same place. Enjoy the rest of the programming. We'll see each other again tomorrow.
Yeah.